The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to Feminist Book Club, the podcast. We're not just about feminist books. We are here for social justice, literature, and media in all its forms. But we do that through an intersectional feminist lens. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Did you know that the most important human invention was gynecology? Not fire, not stone tools, not the wheel, not penicillin, gynecology. What about the fact that humans are not the only species to have abortions? Or that female bodies are probably what led the way to bipedalism? This is just some of what you'll learn when you read Eve, How the Female Body Drove 200 Million Years of Human Evolution by Kat Bohannon. For the last 2,000 years, the story of humanity has been written mostly by men about men. What's more, for over a century, the female body has been drastically left out of biological and medical research. That's slowly starting to change, and what we're learning about the biology of sex differences is rewriting the story of humanity and the story of our bodies, what they really are, how they really work, and where they really come from. Even though we're just starting to scratch the surface of that story, the story itself is 200 million years old. Eve is that story. This book is so fascinating. It's also engaging, easy to follow, and often hilarious. So it's no surprise that it was an instant New York Times bestseller and that it's been longlisted for the Women's Prize for Nonfiction. We also love that Eve is inclusive of trans identities, which is sadly still not the norm for these types of books. So if you've ever wondered why women outlive men or whether or not we evolved to be sexist, you're going to want to check out Eve by Kat Bohannon. Thank you so much for sponsoring this episode. Welcome back to Renee's Review Corner, where I tell you about the books I've read and whether or not you should read them. I'm Renee, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm coming to you from Minneapolis. I spent last weekend at the LA Book Festival, and I had just like the most wonderful time, but the most delightful conversation with author Tia Williams. She signed my copy of A Love Song for Ricky Wilde, and I went on my merry way. I love meeting authors, but I don't love taking up too much of their time because the line, especially for Tia, was so long. But I'm not typically a romance reader. It's just not really a genre that draws me in. But I will say everything this woman writes is absolute gold to me. But I still feel like she's wholly underrated, particularly among non-Black readers, because she writes Black characters. And that's just absurd to me. So here's a hill I will die on. If you like Emily Henry, you need to be reading Tia Williams. Sure. You know, Emily Henry just had a book come out, Funny Story. And yes, of course, I read it and I absolutely loved it because Emily is the reigning queen of smart rom-coms that just leave you with a massive book hangover. And side note, I also think Funny Story is a thinly veiled fanfic of New Girl. Miles is so heavily Nick Miller coded, and that's just another podcast for another day. But if you feel the same way, tell me I'm not alone. All right. But here at Feminist Book Club, we are in the business of diversifying your bookshelf. And that doesn't mean you can't read Emily Henry's books, but I challenge you to read one BIPOC or queer rom-com for every hetero white romance that you read, and I will help you out here. If you love Emily Henry books, you need to be reading Tia Williams. Now, I know I'm not telling some of you anything new here, but Tia Williams is at the top of her game. She's so good. She's a mature Black woman telling mature Black women's stories, and she's doing it with such heart that you can't not fall in love with her writing. The banter, the tension, the familiarity of her characters, they will make the most cynical reader believe in love again. And one thing I do appreciate about Emily Henry's work is that she will take the classic rom-com trope, like fake dating, and make it actually believable. It's one thing I loved about Funny Stories. Some of these romance tropes are just so tired, and honestly, I find them exhausting at this point. They can all kind of feel like the same story, you know, just like Mad Libs style, insert new character name here or whatever. But Emily Henry can make those tropes feel fresh and new and actually real, like grounded in reality. Like, I've never once met someone who has fake dated someone, but, you know, honestly, if Emily told me that's how she met her partner, I'd probably believe her because, again, her stories are so grounded. But back to Tia, she has this exact same knack. When you read 7 Days in June, you know that the love interest is going to be the guy when he just shows up. It's a second chance romance, and I'm always judgy about those. Like, there's a reason. There's a reason that you broke up in the first place, and are we sure this is a good idea? But I trust this storyline. I trust this trope in Tia Williams' hands. In her hands, yes, we are absolutely sure this is a good idea. These flawed characters, they find their way back to one another in such a raw and emotional way, and you just can't help but like swoon over it. And like Emily Henry's women, Tia Williams' main characters are always smart, fully formed characters in their own right. They're not looking for love, but they're looking for the best versions of themselves, and they're always concerned that a partner might mess it up, but they let themselves fall for the romance anyways, and that's a romance trope I can get behind, you know, searching for yourself, accidentally stumbling upon a lovely partner along the way, and that partner ends up just showing you more of yourself. I love that. So before I do wrap this up, I have to talk about Tia Williams' latest book, A Love Song for Ricky Wilde. In this book, we follow Ricky hellbent on leaving the family business in Georgia to strike out on her own in New York. She's funny, she's kind of flighty, she's obsessed with plants. And when a mysterious man keeps showing up in her life, she's enamored with the magic of it all at first. And then the real magic happens. And I'm talking about magic. This book has a flavor of magical realism that I wasn't expecting, and I adored it. And even if you don't think magic in books is your cup of tea, give this one a shot. Again, just like everything else, Tia Williams will change your mind. So, to summarize, yes, read Funny Story by Emily Henry, but also dig into Tia Williams' books, specifically 7 Days in June and A Love Song for Ricky Wilde. And then thank me later. Happy reading, y'all. What would you do? Kira's entire reputation is built upon the development of ethical computing. Her AI, Ellie, is the testbed and best example of using her moral operating system. Her absolute dedication to improving kids' lives could now put all she's worked for at risk. Kira thought she and Ellie, with her ethical framework, could keep everything under control. Against conventional wisdom, it's not the AI's moral decision-making that's the problem, it's the people. This is the setup for Moral Code by Lois and Ross Melbourne, a science fiction novel that explores themes of corporate ethics, exploitation, and the intersection of innovation and morality. When Dr. Kira Stetson merges her company with billionaire Roy Brandt's secretive nanite technology, she finally has access to some much-needed funds. Kira's decision to embed her moral operating system into Brandt's nanite smart dust reflects her commitment to ethical technology development. But it turns out, there's a reason his technology has been such a closely guarded secret. Now she must confront the sinister motives of corporate raiders and the military who seek to weaponize Brandt's nanites, posing a threat to both individuals and society at large. Moral Code asks the reader to consider important and interesting questions, ones that are particularly relevant right now with the rise of AI and the ever-growing greed of capitalist interests. Plus, we want to highlight that 100% of the proceeds generated through the sales of Moral Code will be donated to help fight the child abuse and human trafficking of kids. You can learn more about Moral Code and download a free chapter at moralcodethebook.com. Thank you so much for sponsoring this episode.
Hey y'all, welcome to the Feminist Book Club podcast. This is Taylor, and I'm joined today by Sarah Kofi, author of the book While We Were Burning. And before I get into these questions, let me say I like was on the edge of my seat. I was like devouring this book in a couple of days. And this is a thriller definitely to add to your list. So thank you so much, Sarah, for being on the podcast.
Of course, I am so excited to be here.
So my first question for you today is, of course, I gotta know, what inspired you to write While We Were Burning?
Yeah, so what inspired me was a few things. I always say it started with, like, you know, summer 2020 being the seeds of, like, you know, the main story. Just what was happening with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and this kind of growing paranoia inside of me that we weren't going to see justice in either case. I was very concerned about that. And that's what kind of got the seeds of it going, right? Like, what if someone were to get justice? Right? It's the basic like idea of the story. And then what also inspired it was, you know, I'm being from Memphis. I tell people, like, it's a city that's very dedicated to seeking justice itself. It has a really strong history within, like, the civil rights movement as well. So I thought setting a story that's about someone seeking their own justice in Memphis makes sense. Like, the city matches the themes a lot. So
yes, I love that. And to give kind of a little backstory for the listeners, While We're Burning is a thriller between two women, one a Black woman who loses her son to police violence, and she's just trying to get answers and seek justice around that. So that kind of leads me to my next question is, I thought it was very interesting that the parts told by Elizabeth, who is a white woman, were written in first person, and the parts that were about Breonna, who is the Black mother who lost her son, were written in third. Why did you choose to kind of switch up the point of views like this?
Yeah, so I think there's about two layers to that. The first layer is that Elizabeth just thinks she's the main character. So of course she's in first person. I've also said, like, Elizabeth kind of thinks she's in a different book. She does not seem to realize what book she's in, right? But she thinks it's her story. The second layer is about kind of how each character sees the world. So Elizabeth is also a first person because she's very self-centered, right? Everything is, like, you know, it's all about me. Everything stems from me. And whereas Breonna is the opposite, right? Right. Very aware of the world around her, other people, just other things happening. So I thought it was kind of cool to kind of have that be reflected in how their point of view reads to the reader as well.
That's so interesting because, like, I was just like, huh, this is interesting. But when you said, like, because Elizabeth thinks she's the main character, the story's about her, like, that made total sense now. Like, that made total sense in my head. Because at first I was like, oh, is Elizabeth the main character? But no, like, what you said, like, makes total sense. And I do want to talk about Breonna for a second. So I know in your author bio, you mentioned that you strive to explore the nuances of unlikable Black women, which I love. Like, I love a good messy Black woman because she's allowed to be human, right? So why do you think centering unlikable Black women characters is so important?
For me, it's just so important because we don't really see it a lot. I think that's kind of the thing. I was like, I feel like in fiction and media in general, when Black women are, you know, like, front and center, it's, oh, they're endlessly kind, they're endlessly compassionate, they're so understanding and rational and wonderful. And I'm like, I don't think that's, like, super relatable to a lot of Black women, you know? Like, we have other emotions going on. It's like, of course we can also be this, but it's like, why can't we just be messy on screen? Like, you know, we're messy in real life, you know? Like, so it's kind of, for me, important to have that be reflected back in the media we're consuming. Also, it's just so limiting, right? Like, as women in general, just so limiting to be like, you can be these things, you know, kind, you know, gentle, compassionate, loving, and then that's it. And if you're anything that strays from that, you know, like, oh, you're a little mean, well, you know, now you're just a bitch, right? That's it. Like, so that's all you get to be in these boxes. And I was like, I think it's just more likely that, you know, we all have our off days or whatever too, you know, we can all lean into being bitchy, but we just have these different, you know, dynamics to our personality. I think it's important to explore, because once you do that, it's just being a fully realized person, right? That's the importance of it. Like, Black women are people, which sounds so simple, right? But it's also just like, but we're people, so we have different aspects to explore too.
And it's interesting too, because I feel like I saw a lot of myself in Breonna, as and like to a lot of like the white characters in the book, like, oh my gosh, she's so pretty and she's so nice and she's so perfect, but like there's like all these like feelings and emotions and depth to her that people kind of just like gloss over because, oh my gosh, she's just like this pretty approachable black girl. So I really enjoy the kind of like layers to Brianna because like she's not perfect in all of her re relationships. She doesn't always make the best choices. And like I think it's just also part of her personality too. While she has the capability to cause a lot of harm, she's also brought a lot of joy and she's very caring and loyal to people. And I feel like when we often see like the unlikable or messy black woman, like you said, like they're a little bit of a bitch, then oh, they're just a bitch. And everything else kind of gets written off in like, oh, like you made these bad choices, like automatically you're a bad person, versus like, okay, there's depth and nuance, versus like, if this was Elizabeth's book, I feel like a lot of times readers give a lot more grace and like, oh, well, she's learning. Look at her past. Like, she's got a lot of childhood trauma, things like that. So I feel like the Elizabeths get a lot of grace and compassion, and like the Briannas, like, they just get typecast as one particular thing. So my next question is, or did you have something that you wanted to follow up with that?
Oh no, just agreed, 100%.
My next question is, who are some of your favorite unlikable characters? I know you talked about like them not being a lot of unlikable black woman characters, but who are your favorite unlikable characters, like both books, movies, TV shows?
Yeah, of course. So as we were talking, I was, immediately thinking of Olivia from Scandal, like iconic. Just like this is an extremely messy black woman. I think probably the first time I saw a black woman being that messy on like a network TV show, I was just like, oh wow, I love her, and she's the main character and she's so problematic. Love her. And I know Shonda Rhimes talked about how important that was too. I believe she even mentioned at one point they were trying to get her to make that character white. I think because for success with Grey's Anatomy, and I think Meredith Grey being white, they just figured we'll just have another messy character, just make her white. And it's like, I'm so happy that didn't happen. Like, no, I was like, I think it's very important to get this representation. It's just like, how cool to have a black like anti-hero like in media. That's amazing. So
I just thought of something. This is not a question I originally came up with, but I'm thinking about who gets to tell stories, and the choices they make in the stories that they tell. So I think about like Olivia Pope, written by Shonda Rhimes, like another black woman writing about like the depth of and complexity of black women. But then I started thinking about like, oh, well, I remember seeing lots of messy black women in Tyler Perry movies. And just thinking about how that is a different lens. So, do you think who is telling the story really affects like how we give redemption or compassion to these unlikable characters?
yes, I'm trying not to get too into the Tyler Perry discussion, but yes, I do think it matters, the viewpoint of the storyteller, and also just to what end. So I will say, when it came to Shonda Rhimes' Scandal, and also How to Get Away with Murder, I think she was kind of playing in a different, I'll say, like, ballpark than Tyler Perry. It's just by like means of audience, right? Because I'm pretty sure, without checking, Tyler Perry said the majority of his audience is black women, right? So it's like, of course we can kind of see ourselves, as these nuanced characters. Where Shonda is aiming for a more general audience, and therein lies the issue usually, right? Like, where it's like, we don't think that a wider audience is going to respond to seeing a black woman like complex. It's just not going to happen. So I do think it matters, like, who the audience is for, what ballpark you're playing in, like, as well. So.
I don't want to get too much in the Tyler Perry conversation either, but I will say I feel like sometimes some of his characters are unlikable not because he's trying to show complexity and depth, but because playing into stereotypes. That's just an assumption. People can have different opinions. I'm not in the camp of all representation is good representation, but I'm still exploring and unpacking that. But anyway, so this is Feminist Book Club. So I always like to ask authors about what they're reading lately. But I know probably writing this book, you did a lot more writing than reading. But what is a book that has really impacted you lately?
So lately, so I'm currently in like draft mode, so I'm not reading really anything right now. But before I went into draft mode, I read Night Watching by Tracy Sierra, which is like a feminist thriller. It's very good. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. But the basic premise is, you know, the book immediately opens and she's like putting her child to bed and she realizes there's a strange man in her house. And it's so good. It's so good. It explores just themes of like, you know, women not being believed about their stories, lived experiences, you know, how that like comes to interacting with the world. It's just very, very good.
I think it's safe to say that thrillers is your genre.
Yes.
And I don't want you to have to give away too much about like your next draft, but can you tell us if it's a thriller or not?
Yes, it is a thriller. We're playing in the same realm of like the domestic thriller, but there are twists, which is so vague, but that's all I can say. The safe pitch I've been saying to people, it's about a woman who realizes that maybe someone or something is controlling her every move.
Oh, I can't wait. And I'm just so excited by like this. I don't know if it's kind of this renaissance or if it's just Black women writers are finally getting more exposure. But I'm just loving the domestic thrillers by like Black women that are like coming out nowadays, because I felt like I couldn't really see myself as a Black woman in like the lives of like, oh, like this quiet housewife that has something to shake up her quiet existence. I felt like I couldn't really like connect to a lot of that, but I'm excited for like Black women writing more thrillers. And having me on the edge of my seat and being like, oh my gosh, but what happened? Oh my gosh, but what if? Oh my God, like twists and turns. Like I will say While We Were Burning had my blood pressure up. So in the best way, in the best way. And that's why I read it in 3 days, because I had to figure out what was happening next. But yes, before we leave, where can people find you, your work, and stay updated for when that next book is coming out?
Yes, you can find me on all social media. I think the only thing I'm not on right now is maybe Threads. But all social media at Sarah the Kofi. Also my website, just sarahkofi.com. I also have a book event coming up. I don't know if this will air before then, but if you want to meet me in person, that'll be April 16th, 6 p.m. at Novel in Memphis, Tennessee, bookstore signing event. So come out.
Yes. If I was only in Memphis, I know Memphis like seems like so cool. I've only been to Nashville, which I know Memphis people are like to Nashville. And I honestly feel the same way. So yeah, I am excited to keep up with you and your work and see the next book. You all should definitely get While We Were Burning and have your blood pressure raised in the best way too. But thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us on the podcast today. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
Well-read woman.